We have one case this morning. Mantissa Corporation versus One Star Systems, Lone Star National Bank. 2017-2533. Mr. DeMarco.
Thank you. Your Honor, is John DeMarco for Plaintiff Appellant Mantissa Corporation. As a preliminary matter, we'd just like to make you aware that about 10 months ago, the parties negotiated a settlement based on vacater of the lower court decision. The parties jointly moved the lower court and, after receiving three rejections, moved this court for vacater that was denied, and then subsequently this case was scheduled for.
Thank you. We're well aware of that.
Okay, thank you. May it please the court. The invention here was identity owner control over the use of their identity over computerized transaction networks in a specific way.
Let me ask you a step two question.
Yes.
Because the red brief says that despite Mantissa's, I'm quoting, attempts to show the improvement to a computer network, Mantissa fails to explain how exactly the improvement it identifies is a meaningfully concrete or transformative solution to something tangible.
Yes.
I want you to go right to that.
Sure. The specification begins with explaining the problem with the prior art computer transaction networks. And the solution, the main solution at the time in 2005, was something like LifeLock, a reactive method that would monitor transactions that would take place, store the information, analyze
the computer system.
So the proposal was to design a system that would solve the problem of identity fraud over these networks. They did it by adding structure to a network, and that structure included a separate pathway between the identity owner, the holder of or the owner of, say, assets connected to the identity, and the user, which was a bank or credit card company or credit reporting agency.
But
into that pathway was the service provider.
The claims, if one looks at the claims, don't they just recite transmission of information electronically?
Yeah, they don't just recite that.
Isn't that abstract?
Right. The concept.
You say right, you're agreeing with it.
Yeah. It does include sending of information over that, but it requires a specific order of those communications and specific information in the communications. That's right, but I think the computer hardware is operated based on software. So a structure that's limited in a certain way by software still means there's a technology or structured hardware there. The service provider was described in the specification.
Technology being used to protect the identity, protect the use of the identity.
Exactly, yes. The technology that was used included the addition of a service provider to a conventional transaction network of the kind that had the problems with a LifeLock or reactive system. The user in the best position to know who might want to be accessing the assets, for instance, patient records, money, credit report, would prepare a template, and that's in the claims. It's phrased as parameters. Would prepare the parameters, send those to the service provider.
The template simply puts information in, correct?
The templates identify some kind of identification information is required, and conditions for use, types of conditions for use. Okay,
you're not there yet.
That's fine. That's step one.
It's a three-way transaction, right? You've got this the person who has identity.
Yes.
And then there is a desire by that person to have some transaction occur with some other party.
Right, a merchant or a source.
Merchant or a store. And what the person who's owning their identity is saying to this middle person, there are some times I want my identity to be used and sometimes not.
Right. But the key
and
is...
So what I'm asking you to do is you're protecting my identity. Right?
Yes, it's an agent. The service provider can be thought of as an agent for the identity owner to control the use.
And so what's... new and novel.
What's new?
That.
What's new? So the conventional transaction network included the...
At the time the patent is filed, you're unaware, or this is 102, 103 person, you're unaware of anybody else is doing this. So they aren't, people aren't using computers for this transaction, right?
No, they were, because the LifeLock system was for credit card processing. The beginning of the background discusses the credit card fraud transaction problem. Credit cards were operated over computer transaction networks.
But the question here isn't what's new. That's a 102 question.
Yes.
The question here is what is non-abstract.
Right. And so what's non-abstract is the creation of this new service provider, or a separate service provider, in a pathway.
You mean having a middle person is new?
Yeah. I guess the way I look at it.
Teller at a bank that's verifying signature or a place where you're going to use your credit card and they're saying, I'm not certain that you, let me show your signature.
Yep.
There have been little people involved in this three-way transaction for a long time. Right?
Yeah. Well,
isn't that correct?
Well, no, that example is a two-way transaction. I think you're referring to the Balas reference cited by the lower court.
Well, I'm saying there's a third thing, something that's happening to verify a relationship between the two the players that are trying to use the card.
So we have an identity owner here, a user, their bank, credit reporting agency, hospital holding their records, something like that. And then you have a source that wants to access the money or the patient records or the credit history. So there's already a three-party system to begin with. The service provider is added somewhere up here with a separate pathway over to the user to then control use of the identity.
Before so the bank picks up the phone and calls the credit card owner and says, "Did you authorize this?" What's different?
Right. So the difference there is that's the user. That's the user. And it's the same thing as what's happening in the prior art, where you have somebody looking at a transaction that's taken place and then finding something suspicious.
Okay. I call down to the bank and I say, "I'm sending my secretary down to cash a check. Go ahead and do that."
Mm-hmm.
Have I just replicated your system?
No, you haven't, because they're the agent of the identity owner is going to the user. They're going to the user, and the user is at the top of the decision hierarchy to determine whether use will take place. We are adding something to that structure with the service provider to take that control away. By adding the service provider and giving it only insufficient identification information, so it's not a point of exposure of the identification information
I give my secretary a bearer letter that authorizes her as an agent to do that, or him as an agent.
But again, they're contacting the user. The user is the one that's verifying identity.
Well, if you said to Judge Wallach, well, if there was a third person who could identify and verify that his secretary was actually the secretary, and he had sent information to that person to say, the way you'll know if it's my secretary is she has a white hat and a blue bag, then that would be your
right.
system, but, your third guy.
But those examples are...
So, my without sounding rude, my question would be, so what?
Right.
So what's so earth-shaking
Understood.
To you about
Understood.
Having a way to verify that Judge Wallach's secretary is actually the secretary as opposed to
the impression? But those examples are all referring to verification of identity. None of those examples are referring to conditions for use. The conditions for use are given in the...
What's the difference?
The examples of the conditions for use are gas station from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. when I'm driving home from work. I don't want anyone else charging something on my credit card outside those hours because that's going to be an imposter.
Isn't that just a more sophisticated refinement of identifying General Mark's secretary?
I guess...
Or saying it has to be the secretary who does it, but only can do it between 11 and 12 because that's her lunch hour, and if she does it any other time, you'll fire her. Right?
Yep.
So I don't understand myself why the refinements are sufficient to lift the claims out of an abstract idea.
So you're presenting scenarios that I wouldn't argue are longstanding fundamental economic practices, but you're trying to find out what the source of the invention
was. But they certainly are longstanding economic practices. That sort of thing happens in business all the time.
Yeah, but this was the inventor was not trying to cover those types of arrangements. They had the ability to call their credit card company, cut up the credit card if they wanted to. He wasn't doing that. He came out of software engineering, implementing credit card processing systems at banks. He knew that the user was at the top of the decision hierarchy, right? Now, even though they could mutually agree upon some conditions, the user could know about the conditions. He was proposing a system where the user didn't know the conditions. So now, if that secretary comes along...
When he had his goal in mind, he was able to go to Software Writing 101 and learn very quickly how to write the software to do this and to buy himself a generic computer and feed the software into the computer. So the computer wasn't being asked to perform a trick it had never performed before in terms of being able to swallow that kind of software and process it effectively, right?
The computer was being designed to do a trick it hadn't done before in a service provider.
But there was nothing that would have that prevented. In DDR, the sense was that there was something in the way the computer functioned that said it didn't want to do that.
Yeah, we're not arguing that we're improving how an individual computer operates.
That is your problem. You're not arguing structural changes in the computer.
Yes.
Change in the software relating to the transmission of information.
That's part of it. We're also arguing that there's additional structure here that wasn't in conventional practice. The additional computer at the service provider location in a separate pathway between the identity owner and the user. And let me just finish about the service provider, because I can see a lot of skepticism here. So that service provider needs to receive parameters from the user specifying both identification information and conditions for use. The user did not have access to those conditions. In the examples I think you're talking about, I get the impression the user is going to maybe be aware of those conditions by either a letter that the agent might have.
Who's the user here? The user is?
The user is the bank or the hospital with the records.
The person is going to release the credit.
Release the credit, release the funds, release the credit report. Yeah, this terminology is a little bit,
Right, but the amount of information that the owner of the identity can tell the intermediary, so the intermediary can control whether the user releases the money, is vast. I mean, there's no question about the number of restrictions creatively that your patent would allow to
right.
be put
okay.
into the system.
So it wasn't as simple. I mean, they certainly, the invention for them, they realized they needed to address they were trying to address identity fraud over these anonymous, widespread computer networks. And they thought, how can we do this? Set up a service provider. Okay. Well, the service provider needs to, it's not just as simple as that, because you want, you've created another exposure point for the identification information. So they require only insufficient information at the service provider, it's in the claims, or sent to the service provider, but sufficient enough to locate the identity owner's conditions. Check the conditions, send that back to the user. The user then sends the response to the merchant. But here is the interest. I mean, this is let's talk about the devaluation of identity that occurs with this system. If somebody finds your credit card, they don't know what conditions you've imposed on it. They have to go out and sort of guess. You use it, try to attempt to use it at different locations, and if they're not lucky enough to guess the right conditions, they don't, it doesn't work. So they've devalued the identity.
Your time is just about exhausted, but why don't we hear from the other side and
we'll
give you
thank you.
Three
thank
minutes
you,
of rebuttal back. Mr. Smith.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The district court found Mantisa's patents ineligible after multiple rounds of motions to dismiss practice, a summary judgment hearing, claim construction hearing, live and testimony. And
what did the district court say the abstract idea is?
So that's found in Appendix 14, and basically it was determining whether a given use of an identity is permitted based on information that is in itself insufficient to permit use of the identity, and in for some of the claims, a changeable set of conditions.
On 14 is that?
In 14, I think it's in the middle of the page. There's a block quote there from the judge. And so what we see here is the key here is that, as reflected in the claims, which I can go through.
Determining whether a given use, that whole thing, is that's the abstract idea?
Yes. And this is what she did is encapsulated multiple claims through this. And the key here is information, and really what this patent goes to is just this concept of...
Does that sound abstract to you?
In my view, it absolutely is, because really what we're talking about is just simply the idea of information that is insufficient to permit use of the identity, and being able to provide information that's insufficient to a service provider, which is, I think as we heard from the other side, basically...
Why isn't the abstract idea protection of the use of one's identity?
I think that would also be a fair abstract idea for this at some higher level.
Do the claims only recite steps which transmit information, or do they have physical, tangible steps in addition?
Well, really, for example, Claim 1 of the 027 patent, which is in Appendix 75, that effectively, it just has three steps: receiving, determining, and sending. So the service provider receives the insufficient information effectively.
So you're saying that's all abstraction?
That's it. It's just the same. It's just simply receiving data, making a determination, and sending it.
What about Claim 1 of the 456 patent, which is
The only real difference there is we're talking about the ability to basically temporarily change the condition. So, for example, I can, let's say, in a credit card scenario, say I want to allow it for a while and then change it.
You can call American Express and say I'm going to be overseas for 2 weeks.
Exactly.
In these countries.
That's an example.
Filling stations for this month, week in the month, and not otherwise.
That's right. It only works maybe, and in the patent they have an example of it, doesn't work maybe at night.
The only way I could see this thing working is if, for example, someone invented a chip that projected the fingerprint and a photo of the individual, and then there was hardware which allowed the merchant to take the fingerprint, or something along those lines.
And I think here what we haven't ever seen is any actual inventive concept, any tangible technical improvement. The inventor had testified in the district court level in front of the judge that the inventions were used on conventional hardware, and I think that we've heard that admission here as well. So really the only difference from a conventional system was the interjection of this service provider, which as we heard was effectively a third-party intermediary. And that's exactly the construct in the Alice case. That was a third-party intermediary for a settlement situation. That was found abstract.
In other words,
this is no different.
Just another link in the chain of transmission of information.
It is, Your Honor. It's a intermediary to make the process better in more efficient in some way. But that's really all this patent's cover is just this abstract idea of putting the service provider into this chain. And what we heard too was from the other side was that this service provider was in a pathway, but there's nothing in the claims that talks about any specificity about this particular pathway. That's the generic computer and or software that everyone agrees here was just generic. So there's no improvement to that software. There's no improvement to that system. It's just simply the service provider. And the other point here, too, is...
I think this was invented by the Fuggers in, like, the 13th or 14th century when they came up with the idea of letters of credit.
That may be... I think we found numerous... At the district court levels, There was a plethora of different examples being discussed at the hearing. One of them was a check example where banks had a book of checks and you would confirm the check that had the same signature as the one in the book. That's another example. I think your example of the basically delegating certain responsibilities to an assistant or secretary and for example, just telling the security guard at the bank or someone at the bank, I've told my secretary she has these rights. And maybe the bank keeps a book of the assistants and what the assistants are allowed to do with respect to financial transactions of the folks they work with. I think that's another example. It's a service provider.
Yeah, they can cash checks up to $100.
They can cash checks up to $100. You could write in a book. So everything in these patents you could do with a phone, you could do with a piece of paper, a pencil, maybe not even that. You could probably just do in your head as long as there's someone else you're dealing with and you've talked to and they can remember things. That's about it. There's nothing remotely technical about these claims. And I think the other thing we talked about was this insufficient information. That's one thing in the brief talked about as a potential inventive concept. But the patent specification mentions that the insufficient information can be things like your name, your address, the last four digits of your credit card number. And these are all things that in our everyday lives we've called a 1-800 number and they ask for the last four digits of our credit card number. That's the same concept. It's insufficient information to use the credit card, but it is sufficient for someone on the other end of the line to identify who you are. And that's exactly the same concept. So it's insufficient information. It's not an inventive concept.
Well, if these claims are abstract, as you say, if these are good ideas, how does one protect them?
Well, as we heard, there could be definitely very specific implementations. For example, how is it that the service provider makes the determination? The claims, all they require is that determine something. But if you had a claim that was specifically on here's the software steps you actually in hardware.
Those are still abstractions, aren't they?
Well, I think if you had a lot of detail about how the determining step, for example, worked, I think that would be a lot closer. I mean, for example, you could look at the SRI Cisco case.
Is sufficient to make this not an abstract idea or sufficient to make an abstract idea patentable? What's the difference? You're talking about adding some more bells and whistles at this intermediary person's position.
I think that's probably more of a step two. If they found a step two in terms of inventive concept, so if, like you said, it would still be abstract, perhaps.
Right, but if each of these things you're adding are things you could write down with a pencil to tell the intermediary person to act or not act depending on those conditions, why does the enlargement of the number of potential stop orders that the intermediary has, why does that matter?
I think what I was referring to, Your Honor, to clarify, would be some real specifics about the actual processing and the improvement to a computer necessary for something like a service provider that actually ran on some sort of a tangible specific piece of hardware.
But if it's done with garden variety software run through a generic computer.
I think then it wouldn't be happening.
I'm having a hard time understanding why you're giving this away.
No. Well, I think this is a case where I think there, I'm not sure what exactly the claim would look like where it would be, it would pass step two. I mean, here we have a patent that...
Isn't the answer generally that in the electronics fields, if you start with an abstract idea, you'd better come up with something wild and crazy new that the computer's doing to save it from abstraction?
That's right. That's right.
In other words, not more abstraction.
That's right. More abstraction's not going to help. You actually have to have something concrete. And I think this is a claim where is reflected in the spec and the dependent claims. It's not limited to even a particular field. For example, even if this had been limited to credit cards, I think we would still be in a abstract scenario, but this applies to credit card transactions, building key access. So in other words, actual physical security is an example they have that would be encompassed by the claims.
In other words, this isn't a breadth issue. This is an abstraction issue. It's not a 112 issue.
No, this is an abstract. This is an abstraction problem, and there's nothing in the claims that saves it from that in terms
now
of...
We have two patents here.
That's right.
They both suffer from the same infirmity?
They suffer from the same infirmity, and the district court, her articulation of the abstract idea tried to account for the difference in some of the claims of the 456 patent, which was, as we discussed a little bit earlier, that was the changeable nature. In other words, you can temporarily change your credit card limit or temporarily allow someone to do something with your identity,
Mr.
and then it
Smith,
changes back.
I was a little puzzled by the Hail Mary you've got on in Part C on page 60 of your brief. You say, heaven forbid we should reverse the district court on 101,
yeah.
Then we ought to enlarge the judgment by dealing with the question of the transfer.
That's right.
You have to file a cross appeal to make that argument, don't you? You can't ask us to enlarge the judgment in a reply brief.
Well, Your Honor, we believe we had properly preserved it since the...
Well, why don't just answer the question simply. I mean, you know what the rules are on cross appeals. You're coming in here and saying, well, you'd like a different judgment to be issued.
You make a fair point.
And you can't do that without a cross appeal.
Which you make
is
a fair point.
Why I crossed it out and wrote moot.
Okay. So, I agree, Your Honor.
Well, the problem is we've had, you know, lots of times in the past, this is not an example of that, but for a long while we had parties who were filing incorrect cross appeals in order to get another say in the last brief, and you didn't do that, which is fine. But your argument properly should have been presented, I believe, in a cross appeal if you're going to make it for the future.
There were some other issues raised by Mantisa in his briefing, and if Your Honors would be interested, I could answer any further questions on that. If not, I would just yield the rest of my time.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. DeMonto, 3 minutes if you need it.
Thank you.
Then.
Okay. So I think two cases are helpful to analyzing this situation. The first one is McGrow. McGrow involved steps that were intended to be performed on a computer, although there's no computer hardware recited in the claims. And this court found that the unconventional steps in a certain order brought the subject matter out of abstractness and found it past Alice Step 1. The second case I find helpful is Ancora. The claim is just, it was to software licensing where key information that could have been in any memory was located in the BIOS memory of a computer. And the lower court found that to be abstract. You know, putting the key information in the BIOS memory is just one of the many memories you could put it in, no big deal.
How do you
but
deal
this
with
court,
fair warning?
Sorry, fair warning tracks the prior art. It's a passive, it's a reactive system that looks for suspicious activity and then alerts somebody after the suspicious activity has occurred. So very much like the reactive system that the inventor specifically says they want to design an improvement over. So we don't find fair warning. Our claims are intended to improve upon a fair warning type system. But back to Ancora, moving the key information or locating this key information in BIOS memory versus other memory was found by this court to be something significant. Why? Because a hacker has a harder time to access the BIOS memory of a computer than other parts. Similarly, we've moved key information of these conditions known only to the service provider and the identity owner off-site from the user into the service provider. If a hacker is going to enter the system, they're most likely going to go to the user where the property is. It's going to be harder for them to access both the user and the service provider.
So as long as you add extra computers into the system, it's an improvement.
I think that's a start. That's a start. But look, there's also the insufficient information in there. And I think it was a very novel concept that really no one saw until about 2013 here. So the concept of insufficient information even was novel at the time, just alone. Tokenization is the, we explain this in our gray brief, is something that is now prevalent.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's 1970, and I'm on guard duty outside a fire base, and somebody gives me the wrong, I give the sign, they give the wrong countersign. Okay. That's insufficient information, and I shoot them.
Well, it's, I think you're insufficient identification information.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
Right. Well, there's certainly examples of insufficient information everywhere, but the use of it here was new in computer transaction processing by virtue of the, at least by virtue of the fact that you've got a service provider that wasn't in the structure beforehand and sending insufficient information to it.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
So the case is submitted.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.